Does it get easier?
No. Yes. It gets easier.
Oh, yeah? Look at you.
Thanks. The more you know who you are and what you want, the less you let things upset you.
Yeah. I just don't know what I'm supposed to be. You know? I tried being a writer, but I hate what I write. And I tried taking pictures, but they're so mediocre. You know, and every girl goes through a photography phase. You know, like horses. You know, take dumb pictures of your feet.
You'll figure that out. And I'm not worried about you. Keep writing.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Retro Movie Podcast, a podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to get stuck on an elliptical, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thank you. Ellipticals are crazy beasts.
They're a dangerous machine. I hate them.
Yes, that's fair.
They do the running for you. You know,
like, not a big fan. I prefer a treadmill.
Yeah, or just going outside, you know.
Yeah, that too.
Who needs treadmills? But welcome to my show, everyone. This is a show where every week Perk and I review a movie that was connected to the previous one. If you like our show, we post mostly every Friday. Sorry we had a miss last week, had a scheduling issue once again. But we're back. And if you like our show, be sure to tell your friends about it. We are currently almost smack dab in the middle of our string of female voices, where we're highlighting movies that are directed and or written by women. And this week, we're talking about Lost in Translation. Our connection is Sofia Coppola, who was the director of this one and also directed The Virgin Suicides we watched not too long ago. So, yeah, let's get into it. Perk, why don't you intro it for us?
Yeah, all right. Lost in Translation is a 2003 joint written and directed by Sofia Coppola, which brings it into our fold here. Mm-hmm. It is about a washed-up actor and a young, confused woman on the verge of adulthood, and they're both bored in Tokyo at the same time, and form a relationship and friendship, and yeah, it's that's about it.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, and then a few fun facts about this one. This is Bill Murray's favorite film that he's been in. And Sofia Coppola wrote it with Bill Murray in mind and wasn't going to make it if he didn't want to do it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I did peep one other piece of trivia, but I'll bring it up later when it's relevant.
All right, fair enough.
So I'll be honest, Perk, I watched this movie 9 days ago.
I'm in the same boat. Like, sorry to the viewers, but I watched this one thinking that we would record last Wednesday, and then last Wednesday was a nightmare. So
yeah.
The minutiae I won't remember because I don't take notes. Probably should, but
I got a little bit of notes here.
But then yeah, it's usually I watch it like the night before we talk about it. In this case, it was many moons ago.
But that being said, I think my overall impressions of the movie, I think I definitely like it better than Virgin Suicides, at least for my taste.
Sure.
I think it's a little slow, but overall, I really like the kind of slice of life format of this. There is very little exposition. We're just getting scenes of just people living. They're not explaining shit to us. There's like, hey, there's a person, and here's what's going on in their life. And, you know, back and forth. I think that I really bought, like, the relationship between Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson on like a soulmate level. That being said, I hated the kiss at the end. I absolutely hated it. I wanted a hug. The kiss to me felt like the end of Star Wars 9 where Rey and Kylo kissed. I'm just like, what the fuck is this? I really didn't like that. But besides that, overall, I really liked the movie. I also liked how they showed Japan. I think they didn't romanticize it too much. It's just like another place with its own quirks. So, but yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I just really didn't like the ending.
Yeah, so I pretty much think just about everything about this movie is fantastic. But I'm in a similar boat with you where I was a little uncomfortable with the relationship throughout. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. They're 34 years different in age, and that just, it's a little awkward for me. I actually watched this one with my mom, and she said she didn't have a problem with it because it wasn't romantic. And I was like, which movie were you watching?
Well, I'm with your mom. Like, I didn't feel any sexual tension
Maybe not sexual tension, but there's infinite romantic tension.
Right. Well, that's why I said, like, I used the word soulmate. Because, like,
okay,
they're meant to know each other. And they're meant to have a relationship and, like, be friends and, like, support each other. But that doesn't mean they need to, like, be like have sex or like have a sexual relationship. I bought that there were two people that were supposed to be together, but not necessarily in like a relationship, romantic relationship.
Yeah, I think I don't know. There were just so many scenes where it was like the scene felt like a will they won't they.
Yeah.
Like there was a ton of tension, and you know what? Bang on. Gotta respect Sofia Coppola for directing a shitload of tension.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
mm-hmm.
just the what it was tension around was awkward for me. Yeah. I felt a little uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like the concept of like him being kind of like a mentor to her and just being like something, just being that person that where the vibes match, you know, that can be a very like a comfort in uncomfortable or unknown places. But yeah, like I just. The kiss at the end just really just ruined it for me. And then here's the trivia. So I looked at the trivia for this. And apparently the kiss was not in the script. But the actors said it felt right, so they did it. And then they kept it in the movie. And I'm just like, maybe we should have gone with the script. Because it just didn't work. And I don't know. I don't want to be too, throwing shade. But I'm like, did the actors think it felt right? Or did Bill Murray want to kiss Scarlett Johansson? Because I don't know. It is really just that whole part. Like, I like the saying goodbye again, and I like him whispering to her something along the lines of, like, tell the truth to your boyfriend. But, the kiss is really just left a sour taste in my mouth.
It was awkward, but you know what? In fairness, I think it was supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be, but it certainly felt awkward, and I think in story, I think it would have been super awkward, so the fact that it was a little cringy, like, it makes sense in context, even though it wasn't written, I suppose.
Maybe. I saw, like, a nice hug would have done the job just fine. I'm just like, hey.
It would have been a nicer just... together. Yeah, it would have been a nicer, like bow on top of the gift, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but the weirdness of the relationship, despite that, I still think this is a really good movie. You know?
Oh, yeah, no, you definitely want to go back to the pros. I think there's a lot of... I mean, Murray brings a lot of great comedy to this. That's one of his strengths as a
performer. Yeah, his delivery is just fantastic.
Yeah, just like I wrote down, the elliptical scene, I think is hilarious. the quote-unquote massage scene where he gets the woman sent out is so funny. And... also when he's on set and the director's like having these long sentences and the translator's like, oh yeah, this is one thing. He's like, was that really what he said? Like, all that is so good.
No, I agree with you. I think he's perfectly cast. I can see why he was the only man for the job. And yeah, he just is believable, you know, cause mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
At that point, you know, he's probably what, 40s. No, at that point, I think even 50s.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, it maybe even a little on point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think both of their characters felt very real, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, ScarJo's character is close to us in age, and, I mean, I relate to a lot of what she was going through as someone who also was trying to figure out, like, what to do with my life. Like, I really felt her, and I thought this might be I don't want to take shots at another movie during this review, but, like, I mentioned during our Girl Interrupted review that I didn't really think they showed depression as well as they could. like could have with Winona Ryder's character. And I thought they showed depression really well with Scarlett Johansson, if only for the scene where she goes to that shrine and doesn't really feel anything. And then she calls her friend and tries to tell her about how she's feeling, and her friend just kind of brushes her off. That felt just like very honest and real. And I think that, I just really loved how her character was portrayed, and I could really tell like where she was at.
Yeah, I think that was a great scene, you know, where she goes out to this like shrine temple and expects it to just be like a magical mm-hmm. moment to put her on the right track. And it's like, no, it's just a place. It's pretty on the nose that, you know, a lot of people expect like you make a pilgrimage somewhere and somehow mm-hmm. that fixes you. And
mm-hmm.
maybe if you want it too hard enough, but
yeah,
in more reality, I mean, a place is a place.
Mm-hmm. And also it's a culture or, you know, religion you have no experience with. Right. So it's like to go in and expect it's going to be this crazy thing, you know? But yeah, and also like, I give a shout out.
I do want to go though.
Oh yeah. Sorry. I mean,
I do want to go. I want
to give a shout out to the supporting cast as well, with Giovanni Ribisi and Anna Faris. Both absolutely killed it. I thought, they just killed it. I thought they absolutely.
Anna Faris is like unfortunately perfectly cast in this movie, which is funny.
I also read
like the ditzy blonde.
Yeah, well, I read in the also trivia that this movie is like loosely based on Sofia Coppola's life, and Anna Faris's character is supposedly. Not rumored to be based on Cameron Diaz.
That's right.
And if that's true, I buy it, because she played like a Cameron Diaz, I guess, type very, very well in this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Giovanni Ribisi's fine. His role is a little limited. He doesn't have much to do. But it's like he was good for at least one. Oh, that's Giovanni Ribisi.
Mm-hmm.
So
and he plays the neglecting boyfriend well. Like, you can tell like he probably does really care about her, but you also can tell that not enough to really understand, like see her and see what she's going through and what's going on.
Right.
It's just done really well. But then yeah, like you mentioned, like talking about just like Japan as a character as well, like the night where they go out with like her friends, they do like karaoke and do the bars and stuff. It was like a nice little showcase, and I think one of my favorite lines in this movie is when Bill Murray's talking to his wife on the phone, and I think he was like telling her what they did. And she's like, oh, that sounds fun. And he's like, it's not fun. It's just different. And I think that really sums up Japan in this movie. I think a lot of people, especially the anime fan community that I'm part of, really romanticizes Japan as like this perfect place, you know? And it's obviously not true, right?
Yeah.
And I really like that this movie, I feel like, was pretty honest. And didn't romanticize it too much. It just shows like, yeah, it's just a different place, and they do some things better and some things worse. And, you know, it was just a cool setting for this.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the direction is also nice. I think there's a lot of interesting shots. It's reserved, but it's, you know, you can feel it. Also, I think the score was great.
Yeah,
you always win me over when you put a Phoenix song in there. As a little aside, I was super upset because I watched this movie, like a week ago, which was, mm-hmm. we'll say, like, September 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, because I hadn't listened to Phoenix in a while, because they only put out an album, like, once every 5 years, I looked them up, and turns out they're touring, and turns out they were in Minneapolis at the beginning of September.
That's a bad story.
And I'm very sad about that, because I would have been there in a heartbeat. And this band is French. When are they going to come to Minneapolis again? They put out an album every 5 years.
They'll be back someday.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's funny. I also wrote down in my notes, I really like the soundtrack score, but I'll be honest, I don't remember it at all, because it's been 9 days.
Yeah,
but well, I remember liking it. I remember liking it.
Sometimes that's enough.
Mm-hmm. The last note I had that I want to touch on is just the phone calls that Murray's character has with his wife are just so sad.
Yep.
Like, and like just done, like done very, very well. And yeah, like you just feel the distance between them and the how complex the relationship, because like She doesn't want him to come back, but she also is asking him about the carpet in his office, you know, and I think it's like a fascinating dichotomy, and it's good. It was that backstory was good to kind of understand the headspace he's in, along with like the work he's doing that doesn't really care about, you know.
Right. And I mean, if you like it so much, why don't you stay over there? I think that's more, it's more like in jest, but you know, it's clearly rooted in some truth.
Right. Right. Yeah, even when he's like trying to be kind of honest, like I want to like improve my diet and you know, all this stuff. And she kind of makes fun of him. Like you feel for him. Like he's trying to kind of reach out,
yeah,
but he doesn't know how, but he also forgot his son's birthday. Like, yeah, like him and Scarjo are both people that are just like trying to figure shit out, and it's just really hard. And I think that's really relatable and just done very well in this movie.
Oh yeah, you've reminded me of a scene that I absolutely love. It was weird because they were laying in bed next to each other, but Scarlett Johansson says, "Does it get easier?" And he says, "No. Yes, it gets easier." It's like. Mm-hmm. It's just, it feels so real because it's like his answer is no, but then he realizes I got to talk her off the cliff, you know? So I really like that scene.
Yeah, that's definitely the standout of the movie. It's the scene that I think with the most dialogue.
Probably.
And that's the scene I've seen quoted the most from this movie of like,
sure.
The older you get, the less you let things upset you. And, you know, you'll figure your stuff out. I think it's a really touching scene and, it's kind of the centerpiece of the whole movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once again, like I might have been able to elaborate more if we talked about it a week ago, but
yeah, I mean, like it's a very simple movie. Like
it's a very small movie. It's just like you said, it's just a relationship, just a series of moments.
Mm-hmm.
And the setting is very much a backdrop because the main characters, you know, since there's a huge language barrier, they don't really interact with the setting too much. They're just kind of, it's more of a place, you know? And so, small movie, really nice moments. I think it felt very real sometimes in an unfortunate, weird way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess one last thing I'll mention with regards to that. And I was thinking about before we started recording is like, and I'm sure you agree with me on this. There's this idea in culture, rooted, I think, in toxic masculinity of, like, straight men and straight women can't be just friends, you know? And time again in Hollywood, I think they're going to finally show just, like, a normal friendship between a straight guy and a straight girl. And it never works. They always devolve.
It always ends up.
Every single time. And it just drives me fucking crazy.
Like, nah, I was hoping this was just going to blossom into like a fatherly daughterly type moment, but I mean, clearly his kids are young, so he's never experienced having a daughter that old, and then they end up making it romantic at the end, and it's just
didn't have to do that.
Nope.
Didn't have to. But anyway, do you have any recommendations based on this movie?
Oh, I tell you, I swear I did at one point.
I had one too, but I can't remember. But I'm gonna go with, and this is you're yelling at me, but like any like slice of life of like anime, you know,
I'm gonna beat you up
as well.
I'm gonna beat you up,
and I might have some bonus reviews that fit that criteria.
Of course you do,
but like truly, like this just felt like a slice of life movie to me. You
right,
know?
It definitely like does.
It's just you're seeing people exist.
Yep. I don't know that. Jeffrey Epstein trials.
It's funny. More? Usually we can recommend like other stuff the director's done, but I feel like I wouldn't recommend Virgin Suicides based on this. I think they're very different movies.
They're very different, indeed. I think both have their own merit, too, so it's not like one's better than the other, but it's an entirely different lane.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That is our review of Lost in Translation. Next week, we're going to be watching, wait till the end of the episode and I'll tell you. Also, I don't even know. Perk won't tell me.
Yeah, I have not let you know. It's coming out of left field.
We'll all find out at the end. But before that, we have a shit ton of bonus reviews.
This is actually just bonus review bonanza because it's been 2 weeks.
It's been 2 weeks, and also I haven't been able to control myself on watching stuff, so I have so many. So here's we got, Perk. You got 4, I got 6.5.
All right.
But I can group mine into 4 groups, so we'll just go back and forth.
All right, sure.
I'll let you go first.
All right. So I went out to the cinema.
Oh, shit.
Yep, because... Luke was in town, I caught up with him right before he left town, and I figured this was as good an excuse as any to go see 3,000 Years of Longing.
Oh, okay, I'm very fascinated to hear this review.
Yeah, so it's, what's her name?
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton, thank you. Tilda Swinton, she... is in Turkey at doing a presentation at like a conference and happens upon he's called a djinn, which essentially he's a genie played by Idris Elba. And the movie essentially goes over him retelling his whole history and his past owners and everything, and then it continues after that, and I will say I thought his whole backstory recap, fantastic. Mm. I was glued to the screen. I thought it was really fun. I thought the acting was great. I thought the effects were not noticeably garbage, you know, which is nice.
Were you comparing them to Fury Road at all?
Like no, not even a little bit.
Okay.
Not even anywhere close.
Mad Max is mostly practical, wasn't it?
Yeah, Mad Max is almost entirely practical effects.
Yeah.
At least with all the explosions and stuff.
Right,
but,
right.
This is a much smaller movie, and it's centered around magic. So
Okay, yeah.
There's almost nothing comparable. The stories he tells of his past lives essentially are gripping and very interesting and super fun to follow. Mm-hmm. And then the movie keeps going. And it overstays its welcome by quite a bit. And there were maybe 4 or 5 moments where in the final third of the movie it broke down into a bunch of moments, and the way that they transitioned between moments was fading out and fading back in. And like 4 times when it faded out, I'm like, surely that's the end. and it wasn't. And I think if the movie had just been him retelling his tales and then a sharp end, I think it would have been great. Mm-hmm. But since that overextended denouement exists, I think it's only good.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
I'd say maybe if you get... bored, give it a watch on streaming, but maybe turn it off for the last half hour. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because based on the trailer, it seems like the whole movie is just him telling his backstory.
And the majority of it is. I mean, after that, it's pretty much all falling action.
Right. It just goes on way too long.
Yeah, it overstays its welcome.
That's a damn shame.
But yeah, like, see, I can't hate on it too much, because you know me, I always whine about no creativity.
Hey,
and then George Miller, the illustrious director of Mad Max Fury Road, Babe 2, Pig in the City, and Happy Feet, he comes out with a movie that's like Aladdin for adults, so I gotta respect the hustle for originality.
Well, maybe it'll inspire something else that's super good, and I am interested in, yeah, like you said, the main part of the movie, so maybe I'll watch it on streaming. But yeah, it's a bummer that it doesn't stick the landing, though. Okay, my first section here, I got a PSA and then a movie review.
Okay.
So, first, PSA. If you are an anime fan, like me, and you like the anime Jujutsu Kaisen, but you didn't get to go see the movie when it came out in the theaters, it is now on Crunchyroll, and you can watch it. Perk, this is the equivalent of Mugen Train, but for a different anime.
Yeah, I know when it came out.
I heard
lots about it.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good, and I've rewatched it, had a great time. If you are interested in Jujutsu Kaisen, but you don't want to commit to like watching the whole show, maybe watch the movie first. Might get you into it. But yeah, check that out. But movie I got was recommended by a friend, and surprisingly actually fits into our current string because it's directed and written by a woman, and it just came out on Netflix called Do Revenge. Have you seen this one going around?
I've seen like a poster. I haven't seen or heard anything about it.
Okay, so Maya Hawke and, let me get her name, Camila Mendez star in this one. It's very Mean Girls meets Booksmart meets Clueless kind of a vibe.
All right. Hopefully general... you can win me back.
Well, I might, but maybe not. We'll see. General premise is that one of Camila Mendez plays the popular girl, you know, top of the school.
Sure.
You know, classic. And then, I was going to spoil the first acting movie, but it's not your spoiler. Her boyfriend outs her sex tape and she gets completely just ruined, right?
Ah.
At the same time, Maya Hawke is a new girl at school, and turns out one of the people at the school is a bully that she had when she was younger. And she runs into her and is like, I don't want to deal with this. So the two girls team up to do revenge for the other one. So
they help,
you know, get revenge on their other's bullies. So here's what I'll
say. It's an interesting premise.
Pretty interesting. But when, okay. This movie to me felt like just driving on the highway, pretty standard, right? If you've seen Mean Girls, if you've seen Booksmart, you've seen Clueless, pretty standard stuff. You know, the two girls becoming friends and doing funny stuff, yada, yada, yada. It was fine. You know, I'm enjoying it fine, but nothing's like blowing my brain. It's funny enough, whatever. And then, right at the beginning of, I'll say the third act or whatever, the climax movie, the movie takes a hard, hard left turn into you're off the road now. And I'm like, holy shit, they are doing this? This is fucking awesome. But how the fuck are they going to end this movie? Like, this could be amazing. And then they just get back on the highway and it finishes. I was like, oh, that's it? That's you took this amazing twist, and then the movie just kind of resolves itself. And so I'm just left with this, all these emotions that I just, like, don't know what to do with. Like, I think part of this... So this is listed as like a dark comedy, and I would consider it a dark comedy.
Okay.
I think having the same issues I had with Seven Psychopaths. I just don't think dark comedies are for me. Because sure. It seems like one of the components of a dark comedy is that not every character gets its comeuppance at the end of the movie. For good, for better, or for worse.
Yeah.
And in this movie, I won't say which characters, but there are characters in the movie that when the movie ends up like, you did not deserve that, you know, or whatever. So I'm just felt... I'm very conflicted, but like I will say the acting is insanely good. I think Maya Hawke in particular is fantastic in this film. I think it's shot well, written fine. Like it's very much like modern, you know, teen slang. I think there's a couple lines that are pretty cringeworthy, but I don't know. Like I kind of want you to watch it because I know you kind of dislike the coming of age genre, and we've watched a lot of movies recently, but the twist is so crazy. I kind of want to see if you would like it. I know you like dark comedies more than I do.
Okay.
But yeah, I think I, in my taste of watching stuff, I really like it when I want to feel satisfied at the end with where the characters end up. And I just was not satisfied where the characters end up in this movie.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it's a weird one. I know people have been really liking it. It's just not really my cup of tea at the end of the day. But
fair enough.
Maybe check it out. Yeah.
All right.
What's your next one?
I watched a television show from the 80s.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir. It's called Police Squad. Have you heard of it?
I have heard of Police Squad.
Have you heard
Is
of...
Is that the Leslie Nielsen?
Yeah, yeah.
Naked so Gun? Okay.
Have you seen the Naked Gun?
So I've seen Airplane.
Okay.
And I think I've seen... When I was a kid, I've seen like bits and pieces of Naked Gun. And it's going to feel weird, but I've seen Angie Tribeca, which is like a spiritual successor to that style of comedy.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, I know that genre. It's really fucking funny.
So Police Squad precedes Naked Gun. It has the same characters. It's the same universe as the Naked Gun.
Okay.
But it was originally a TV show that aired for one season of 6 episodes and was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. Yeah. It turns out, so the like studio head at the time said that it was canceled because people had to watch it. Because, you know, nowadays, today, you know, if you watch a sitcom like The Big Bang Theory, there's a 7-second laugh track before and after the joke. Mm-hmm. So it pretty much signifies to the audience who doesn't actually watch it, like, oh, now is the time to pay attention. Because essentially, when people look for a sitcom, they're not looking to watch it. They're looking for it to be on in the background.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't do that with this show. Yeah. So, you know, you had talked about how you put on, like, an episode of a show when you wake up. Mm-hmm. That's what I did with this show, because you can't afford to be drowsy through it.
Yep, yep.
Because you have to be paying attention, because it's just, it's absolutely spot on my humor. Like, there's stuff in there like, oh, look out, tow truck's here to, like, tow away a busted car. Mm-hmm. Except then they walk past a giant toe-shaped truck. And it's just, everything is like a literal pun or like a non sequitur. It's just great. Like, he said, one of the officers says, cover me. And dude throws a tarp over him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he runs around because he can't see. And it's just so funny. It is nonstop laughs for the entire show. It's fantastic. It's inspired me. I'm going to go back and watch the Naked Gun movies again because I haven't seen them in a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, Leslie Nielsen is a comedic genius. It's a tragedy that he was so far before, like, most of our times. But, you know, I feel like there's a lot of, you see a lot of influence of that type of comedy in modern day. So, yeah, it's not streaming. It's on, like, dailymotion.com. Just all the episodes are just on, like, there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm writing that down. You know, you're making me really want to watch it.
It's really good. It's like he offers a woman a cigarette. Cigarette? Yes, it is. Like, it's so good.
I'm writing it down.
Yeah, so I very much enjoyed my time with that show. I'm sad it's only 6 episodes. Because it's just such a banger. But it's not just 6 episodes, right? Because then it becomes 3 movies after that, so... Yeah, well, stay tuned.
I know Airplane's not as... People don't think it's as good as Police Squad and Nikki, but I still love that movie.
I love Airplane as well.
I've never seen Airplane 2, but...
I don't think I have either. But, yeah, Airplane is also fantastic. So, yeah, watch this space. I might be on a rewatch train of the Leslie Nielsen movies.
Hell yeah. I'm very excited for that. All right, my next review is... I'm going in order of kind of, like, relevance, pop culture relevance.
Sure.
So, Cyberpunk Edgerunners just came out on Netflix. So this is a new anime based on the game Cyberpunk 2077 that came out last year, to mixed reviews. A lot of it was technical issues, but it was like one of the most hyped up games of all time. And then when it came out, it was kind of like, ugh, this does not really go as well as people wanted it to. And I played it. I never finished it, but I liked the game fine. I had a lot of issues with technical stuff, but characters and story were fine. World's cool. I just don't know if it's really my cup of tea. It's pretty dark and depressing. Sure. It's a very, you know, fucked up, very technologically advanced, but very late stage capitalism. You know, like 3 corporations run the whole shindig and all that kind of stuff. Perk, how familiar are you with the Cyberpunk?
A little bit.
Okay. You didn't play in the game, did you?
No, sir.
Okay. So. Yeah, so this anime just came out. It's produced by Studio Trigger, who are pretty well known for stuff like Kill la Kill and Gurren Lagann. I like their stuff. They're not my favorite studio. I feel like they're really good at color and visuals, but their characters can be kind of lacking for me sometimes. But anyway, to get to the show. The show's fucking incredible. I was so shocked. Like, people were saying it was good, but holy shit. This show is fucking incredible. It's 10 episodes. It's super tight, you know. It's a tight story. I don't think it's going to be a season 2. If it is, it'll be with different characters. It's about a street kid who, you know, is really poor but is really smart. She's going to, like, this fancy academy and, you know, doesn't fit in. That's a pretty standard, you know, setup. But then his entire life goes to shit and he's kind of forced to leave and he kind of joins, like, a street gang and they start, you know, running jobs to try to survive. And, I think the game really explores the themes of that world in such, like, a potent way that the game couldn't do because the game is what, 60, 70, 80 hours, and you're playing the main characters who, they can't do certain things when you're playing the main character, but in this, it's a separate character, they do whatever they want. Right. And they, it goes there, man. Like, a criticism in anime for me is that a lot of times there's no tension, because, like, I don't believe any character's ever gonna die, because it's anime. That's not true in this show. They will kill anybody at any time. It's a very harsh world, and it's such good things of like how fucked up capitalism is. What are you kind of willing to do to survive? Like, what is humanity when you're putting in these metal parts into your body all the time to augment yourself? Like, are you still a person? Is it worth it? Like, I don't know. It just really hit me. Like, the entire time I was watching it, I didn't like ever like cry, because it wasn't going for those kind of emotions. And the characters, like, were good, but they weren't, like, outstanding. But the final, like, scene just, like, hit me like a freight train, and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it since. It's really well done, and massive shout-out to the studio. They were so creative with the animation. Like, so just as a quick example perk, super speed is something you see a lot in anime, right? And usually it's, like, the character, like, vibrates, then zips, and they're just gone, right? And they, like, appear behind someone else. How they show super speed in this show is so fucking cool. It basically, like, time slows down, but every second there's a frame that appears behind the person that's moving that's in a rainbow color. And it just looks fucking awesome. And it's like, I've never seen super speed done like that. And it just is such a cool visual style. They also show another thing called cyberpsychosis, when someone kind of starts going crazy because they have too much machine parts and their brain can't handle it. How they showed that is really, like, unique and cool. Like, they were just really smart with how they decided to show stuff with animation that wasn't like the standard, like, glitching out that we always see with robot stuff. It was just really fucking good, and I'd recommend it to pretty much anyone who is interested in that world, that genre, because, like I said, super tight 10 episodes. I'll say, though, don't watch it with your parents around. There's a lot of boobs in this show and a lot of gore. It's very kind of mature and vulgar, but I think it's done pretty well. It's not like I haven't watched season 3 of The Boys yet. I heard The Boys, some people were saying it gets a little bit in almost like gore porn territory. I don't think it really goes there in the show. It all kind of fits in the world. It's just a really brutal world. Sure. So it all kind of makes sense, but definitely check it out if you're interested. All right, back to you, Burke.
Oh yeah, my turn. The next two are movies I tried to catch before they left streaming at the end of the month.
Okay.
The first one I'll do is Taxi Driver.
Oh, okay.
Which is Martin Scorsese, mm-hmm. starring Robert De Niro, playing a very good actor. it follows a lonely, cut-off taxi driver who can't sleep and all these long nights, and he puts him on the edge, and he starts to go downward in a spiral, and mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. follows pretty much him and a few people he meets along the way, and it is very good. Robert De Niro is magnificent. As someone, obviously, he's before our time, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, I've seen him in stuff like newer stuff.
Limitless is what I just went to in my head for some reason.
Oh, that's funny. But yeah, like, you know, you got to go back a little ways to get like his prime, you know, mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. Godfather Part II, Taxi Driver as a couple examples. This movie, it's just amazingly directed, it's amazingly scored, fantastically acted, including a performance by Jodie Foster when she was 14 years old at the time, which is crazy. Just kind of digging through the underbelly of New York and the taxi system, and it has a through line of politics and figurehead worship, and it's such a good movie. Would definitely recommend if you have 2 hours before tomorrow when it leaves. I believe that one was on Netflix. It's leaving Netflix.
Maybe moving to a different platform. But
I have a feeling that there might be some sort of aggregation going on with a bunch of things that are leaving.
I do have to ask you, though, Perk, because everyone else did this when it came out. How would you compare it to Joker?
I would say it is better. I like much better.
Well, so I guess, like, do you think Joker was just, like, for lack of a better term, just copying it? Or how would you compare the two?
There are 100% very similar themes involved. I think Joker is a worse movie. And I think a lot of that's to do with the hand at the helm. Because it's what Todd Phillips, right? Who I don't really rate as a director. I think Joaquin Phoenix hard carries that movie, and is absolutely mesmerizing. But I don't think he does. I think Robert De Niro's performance in Taxi Driver is better than Joaquin Phoenix's performance in Joker. Mainly because there's a lot more range he has to go to, because he starts off as kind of an average Joe and has to paint the portrait of descent into illness. And I, you know, they do that in Joker too, but he starts off as a very odd character to begin with. So he's kind of always in a frame of being out there, you know, whereas De Niro has to reel it in a lot in this movie. I absolutely see where people are coming from, though. Definitely a lot of similar themes. I hadn't known because I hadn't seen Taxi Driver, but I see tons of parallels now that you mention it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either, but I just remember when Joker came out, everyone was making that comparison. Interesting. But
I think it's a fair comparison to make.
Yeah.
But I think it's a little one-sided. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah, so. I think most people would probably agree with you. I think the problem is that the Joker is the Joker, which comes with a whole set of beliefs and fans and ideas, and that can skew the conversation.
Taxi Driver is not so much a movie for comic book fans. Saying they shouldn't watch it, just saying the target audience of Joker is a built-in fan base that is comic book fans.
Right, exactly. Well, cool. My next one I want to talk about is I watched Harley Quinn Season 3.
Just
wrapped up a couple weeks ago. Still just a great show. Absolutely love it. I will say I think this season started out a bit slow for me. Wasn't the jokes per minute that I was expecting or was used to from previous seasons. They focus a lot on spoilers, but, you know, whatever. At this point, Harley and Poison Ivy are finally, like, dating and together, which was kind of the arc of, like, the first two seasons of them, like, they won't they, and I think their relationship is handled really well. You can tell the writing team is comprised of women and queer people. It just, they do a really good job of like representation in the show and just having really good conversations about relationships. But I do think the first few episodes are a little bit too heavy on that stuff and not enough comedy. But that being said, the back half is amazing and hilarious. Like, there's an episode in this season that's just about the Joker, who in this show has gone so many places, but I don't want to spoil it, but basically at this point he's a sitcom dad sitcom stepdad, and that's some of the funniest, like, this episode is just about him dealing with like local politics, like his school with his kids, and it's the funniest fucking shit like I've ever seen. I love the show. I really recommend it, especially to DC fans, because they poke so much fun at the DC movies and just DC characters in general. And, like, their interpretation of DC characters is always surprising, but it makes sense, and it's just hilarious. So, Harley Quinn Season 3, absolutely love it. What's the last one you get, Perk?
So, same vein, for a lot of reasons. Another Scorsese movie that is leaving streaming like tomorrow, also starring Robert De Niro, Raging Bull.
I need to watch that movie, man.
You do need really to watch that movie. I led with Taxi Driver, which I think was phenomenal, but Raging Bull is like maybe perfect. Like it's close. It so the premise, if you're unaware, is like, what if Rocky hit his wife?
Mm.
It's there's a lot more to it, but it's another like the last couple days watching these movies, I think Robert De Niro is the best actor ever. I think, like, good Lord, he is simply mesmerizing. And I watched two movies in 2 days, both with him, similar time periods, two different guys. Not even recognize. Raging Bull is amazing. De Niro's fantastic. Joe Pesci has a big role. He's great.
Love Joe Pesci.
Yeah, he's awesome. One of the best directed films I think I've ever seen. There are some really, really amazing moments with the camera. Like, he has one kind of, when he's teetering on the edge of collapse, he has a fight, and there's a particular shot in the fight near the end, and it's like a dolly in, pan out at the same time. It's just to like brings in the lights in the background, and oh my goodness, that, yeah, it, like, I'm gushing, I'm cheesing about it, yeah. But that, yeah. Oh, that movie is so good. Love everything about it, except there are a few scenes that are maybe a little gratuitous. And I think, so if you like The Wolf of Wall Street, it has a very similar structure. So it, one thing I think Scorsese does really well is he doesn't leave you with a fall. He walks you through the whole fall. You get to see the whole spiral downward, you know, like, when you see at the end of The Wolf of Wall Street, when he ends up, you know, talking at conferences, or at the end of The Irishman, it's literally the main character in a nursing home. All of his people are gone, and he's still just not talking to police, even though it was all 40, 50 years in the past. He walks you through the whole way down, and there are some great juxtapositions and some incredible, like, almost disturbing, like, physical deformations. Like, it's one of those things where Robert De Niro, like, gained 50 pounds for a scene. Stuff like that. And I think the man's a tried-and-true method actor, and boy, oh boy, does he just fall into the role. So, yeah, I think it's a masterful acting performance. It's a elite directing performance. I'd absolutely recommend Raging Bull if you haven't. Taxi Driver, watching it feels old. Raging Bull 100% stands up. Could not tell. It could have been made 5 years ago.
Wow.
Like, it's in black and white, so it kind of hides some of that.
Right.
But yeah, it's, oh boy, I love that movie. I look forward to rewatching that somewhere down the line.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, I've been wanting to watch it since John Bernthal was on Hot Ones, and he was asked, like, what's the best boxing movie of all time, and he said Raging Bull, and I was like, I gotta watch it, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, it's less shiny than a lot of boxing movies.
Yeah. What stream service was it on?
It was on Prime.
Okay. Well, okay, I didn't have Prime anyway. Hopefully it'll come to something that I have access to. All right.
Yeah, so I was sorry. I was thinking
yeah,
maybe these movies are coming off because, like, HBO's buying up all the rights to Scorsese or something like that.
Sure, yeah. Well, HBO's going through a whole bunch of shit right now, but we'll see where that all shakes out. All right. Final bit here. I got three anime that are all kind of the same genre, so I packaged them together.
Sure.
And Perk, I'll be honest with you. You might send me to horny jail for one of these, but we're gonna go through it, and you can make fun of me as needed.
I got my bonk baseball bat ready.
All right. So these are all slice of life, feel good, wholesome shows that if you just watch Taxi Driver and you're like, man, that was intense, I need something to make me feel good. I got the lineup for you. All right. Nice. So I watched these pretty much back to back. First one is season two of Comey Can't Communicate. I talked about the show when I watched season one, I don't know, like months ago. Love the show. If you don't remember, the premise is a girl in high school is extremely socially anxious to the point where she can't verbally speak to other people. And she makes a friend and he helps her. The goal of the show is for her to make 100 friends. So it's them helping, being friends and helping each other, and him helping her kind of overcome her anxiety and make friends. And it's just so wholesome and makes you feel good. But I will say, season two, I don't know what they did, but it's just so much funnier than I remembered. Like, season two is funny as fuck. I was dying laughing for a solid chunk of these episodes because the gags are just so ridiculous. Like, all of the characters are just a complete, you know, caricature of a personality. And they really do that to a great effect. So all the gags in the show are just so fun. Just as an example, there's a new character that's introduced who is a guy that, like, had to stay home from school for, like, a whole semester because he was sick. And he, like, wanted to improve himself. So he's got, like, super jacked and, like, dyed his hair blonde. So he comes back and looks like an absolute thug. And everyone thinks he's super scary. But he's, like, actually very shy. He doesn't know how to talk to people. So everyone kind of misinterprets how he acts. And to, like, try to learn how to make friends, he, like, reads a bunch of books. And one of them is, like, a flirting book. So he's, like, flirting with these other guys, trying to be friends with them. It's very funny. There's a lot of, like, sexual adjacent gags, but it's never weird. I think it's done tastefully and I think very funny. So that's the first one for you. Second one. This one and the next one are both on Netflix, by the way. Second one is called Kotaro Lives Alone. This is a relatively new anime, 10 episodes for season one. Premise of this one, perk. You got a kindergarten kid. Okay, he's 4 or 5 years old, named Kotaro, lives in an apartment by himself. Which, on its surface,
I hope this isn't the one you were talking about with Horror.
No, all definitely right. Not. Definitely not.
We'd have to have a conversation.
The show is kind of him making friends with his neighbors and them. He's a very mature kid and very smart. And the whole premise of a 5-year-old living by himself is very funny. And they do a lot That's of comedy fair. With that. But I will say this show does not pull its punches when.
All right.
Because as you might imagine, Perk, when you start thinking about why a kindergarten kid might be living alone.
Natural drawing possible connections, yes.
Yeah, the show does not pull punches when talking about child abuse, childhood trauma, stuff like that. And I think it's super well done. Like, this show will make you cry laughing, and then it will make you actually cry. You're like, this is so sad that this kid has been gone through this stuff. And it just blindsides you, man. Like, this is an example. Him and his neighbor are at the store just, like, buying tissues, you know? And for whatever reason, the kid is, like, obsessed with the super expensive ones. And his neighbor's like, why does this kid love these, like, really expensive tissues? And he's like, he's like, oh, they're like, really sweet. He's like, what do you mean by sweet? Come to find out, the kid likes those because he used to have to eat tissues when his parents wouldn't come home. And he liked them because they tasted sweet. And it's like, holy fuck, like, this is coming. You came out of nowhere with this shit. Now I'm crying. So it's stuff like that. But like I said, the show is still like very funny and wholesome. Like, it's just the whole package. And I recommend it to anybody. Like, it's such a fun time. It's really quick, 10 episodes. So yeah, if you're in the mood for a laugh and a cry, definitely check out Kotaro Lives Alone. Last one. This is where the horny jail, I might need to be reprimanded a little bit, Perk. All right.
All right.
This one's called My Dress Up Darling. Okay.
All right. I'm listening.
Here's the premise. Got a guy. It's a boy meets girl type of story. Boy is very introverted, shy, doesn't have any friends. And that's because when he was a kid, he was hanging out with his grandpa's house. And his grandpa showed him that he makes... we don't really have anything that's similar in America. It's called Hina dolls. So you might recognize them if you saw them. But like in Japan, they're a type of doll. It's not like a doll you play with. It's like a... like a diorama almost, and it's like the classic traditional, like a Japanese, I don't want to say like a wealthy Japanese woman will say, with like the white makeup and like the hair done up in like a kimono, you know?
Oh, sure.
And they're called Hina dolls, and it's dolls of those. And so the main character, he fell in love with them immediately, and he wants to learn how to make them. So he's spending, his passion is making these Hina dolls. But he doesn't tell anybody because he's worried people are going to think he's weird because he's a boy who likes dolls, you know?
Sure.
Boy meets girl. Girl is, like, popular girl at school, very outgoing, has, you know, has no shame about anything. And is super into, like, anime and stuff. And they meet because he is at school and he has to use the sewing machine at school because his one at home broke. And she comes in and they meet each other. He finds out she is really into cosplay and wants to cosplay a favorite character, but she's absolutely terrible at sewing. So they become friends, and the show is him making outfits for her to kind of, so she can cosplay as her favorite characters. So it's basically like a cosplay anime, I will say. Okay. Like, and what I love about anime is so much you also learn about shit you just didn't know about. Like, I learned so much about cosplay in this show because they go over like all the details. Like, yeah, if you want to like change eye shape, use this special tape and you can like go certain ways to make your eyes look different or stuff like that. It's not part of it's cool. And it's just very sweet. Like, them, their chemistry is so great. And, you know, shy guy meets outgoing girl, you know, she helps him kind of find his voice, stuff like that. But I'll say, Burke, there's a lot of shots in this anime of boobs and butts, and they do not skimp on those shots. Overall, I think I've seen worse. Like, as far as fan service goes, it's mostly fine. A lot of it comes to the fact of, like, because he's making outfits, like, he has to measure her and, like, stuff like that. And thankfully, he's not a protagonist that's, like, a perv, which is always the worst when the protagonist is just, like, a piece of shit. He's a super good guy. He's just very awkward with situations like that because he's not had friends before. But, you know, it's just very wholesome. I just finished it today. Had a great time with it. And what I like, too, is that, like, it's not just a romance show. It's a cosplay show that has romance on the side. And I think that works a lot better because, like, the main plot isn't them, will they, won't they, which can get kind of frustrating. So, yeah, no, just had a great time with it, and I would recommend it. Just be aware that that's probably another show not to watch with, like, if your roommate or mom's going to walk in because there might be just some boobs on screen.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Duly noted.
So we got through them all. That's all of our bonus reviews
all right.
for the week.
Well outweighed our actual review.
What is this mystery movie we're watching next week?
Yeah, all right. So I'm going to start by explaining why it's connected and not a stretch. Okay. And yeah, obvious. So, Booksmart.
Mm-hmm.
What's-her-face's dad is played by Will Forte.
That's correct.
Will Forte is a voice actor in the English dub of the French film My Life as a Zucchini, which is written by Celine Sciamma, who is the director of the movie we're watching next week, which is called Petite Maman, which came out last year. And
is it a French film?
Yes, it is a French film. And I've only heard amazing things. And also, this is the director of Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I would probably pick that had I not seen it and also wanted to see this new one from her.
Okay.
So we're going to watch Petite Maman.
Okay.
If it makes you feel any better, it's really short, so it won't take up too much of your time.
13? Okay, I just got one quick question.
Yeah, yeah.
I know nothing about this movie. I'm looking at the poster. This isn't a horror movie, is it?
No.
Okay, thank God. All right.
Far from.
Okay, fantastic. All right, there we go then. Petite Maman next week, and you said it's on Hulu.
Perfect. Yeah, it's on Hulu.
There we go. I was so worried. I was worried it was going to be...
What were you thinking?
I don't know if it was directed by a woman. I was worried about Iris Goes West for some reason. Ingrid Goes West. I was worried about a movie of that nature. It's going to be make me feel...
It's probably the most uncomfortable movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was Class is great, though.
Yeah. Well, she's always great. And a little
she's
bit
fantastic.
Come on.
Yep.
But yeah. All right. There we go. Petite Maman on Hulu next week. Thanks for listening to this whole thing, if you did. Hopefully you got something recommended to you that you want to watch. But yeah, until next time, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.